This podcast of The Business is a production of KCRW Santa Monica at 89.9 FM, webcast at kcrw.com, and distributed by NPR.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Acura, featuring the all-new turbocharged Acura RDX with available real-time traffic alerts. More at acura.com/RDX.
This podcast is a production of kcrw.com.
From KCRW in Santa Monica, I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner, and this is The Business.
So you still want to do the show business, and you think that you got what it takes? I mean, you really got to rap and be all that, and prepare yourself for the breaks. Check it out.
This week on The Business, how far can talent, good looks, and connections get you in Hollywood? All the way to limbo. Don't go anywhere. It's The Business from NPR. Eric Fleming is charming, good-looking, and talented. He wrote, directed, produced, and starred in the 2004 indie comedy The Almost Guys with Robert Culp and Shawnee Smith.
To make a major league score,
I give them the million I owe them, and we split the other million.
They've got to have the perfect team.
I'm the Colonel. This here's Jim.
Holy...
Buddy, watch your language.
Come on, guys.
You always bring your son and your father on kidnappings?
I don't want to talk to him.
But given the rest of his experience in Hollywood, the Almost Guy is a label he's fighting hard to avoid because Fleming was ill-prepared for life in the business.
I worked in New York. There was a great, you know, really, really supportive indie scene there. And they're a really supportive community. It's really nothing like Hollywood at all.
At the time, he was working with legendary indie director Hal Hartley.
I said, Hal, are you going to come to Hollywood now? I mean, I thought that was a natural progression. He said, no way. I'll never go out there. I can't do what I do in that town. And boy, have those words stuck with me. I mean, I dream of night terrors and wake up hearing those words, you know?
Since coming to L.A., Eric Fleming has had a painful succession of high-level near misses, which isn't to say he hasn't worked hard, literally and figuratively, to break into the business.
MTV Films wanted to remake Urban Cowboy. I guess Paramount owns that. So I was, you know, I'd come up with a pretty good take on it and good pitch. And that's a pretty high profile project. So really eager to get it. And I showed up to a meeting. This is after a few development meetings. It was a pretty big pitch meeting at Paramount. I didn't have my wallet and I had my ID. And I said, I'm sorry, I forgot everything, but I have a drive on. I'm supposed to go meet with MTV and Paramount. And they said, well, we'll have to call them and have someone come out. I didn't want them telling them that I just felt like a jerk. So I said, oh, don't worry about it. So I went into the neighborhood. I parked the car on the street and started walking along the wall looking for a place to scale, you know. So I found like near Van Ness and Melrose a pretty decent spot. You know, in addition to strengths as a comedy writer, I have good upper body strength, which comes in handy, I think. So I managed to scale the wall, and I was going over, and sure enough, there's a security guy walking, you know, not 100 yards away. He comes over, says, you know, he's thrilled. I mean, nothing's happened like this in a while, and you know, a writer hasn't gone over the wall probably in a decade or two, you know? And I thought, should I run? I know I can outrun this guy. And I'm thinking, this is getting really ridiculous. I can't believe I got a pitch meeting I'm already late for. And I, you know, you looked me up in the books. I legitimately did have a meeting. So they ended up calling MTV, and they didn't know I scaled the wall for this. Now I guess now they will know.
How'd the meeting go?
I bombed it. I totally bombed it.
Our producer Matt Holzman spoke with Eric Fleming about the elusive but still sweet smell of success.
Eric Fleming, thanks for coming on The Business.
Thank you for having me.
So what was your expectation before you got on the plane?
Yeah, to come out here?
I mean, realistically, you thought what was going to happen. You're going to land on the ground. You're going to go to your friend's couch and sleep on it. And what was going to happen?
So, yeah, I came out here thinking there'd be like a band at the border to greet me. You know, it was brutal. I mean, I couldn't get anyone to read anything. And I was a writer, director. I'd done acting. I was in New York as an actor before that. So, you know, here I had this little thing on Discovery Channel. I thought, you know, I'll just wait around. The phone will ring eventually. Someone, you know, and I really tried everything, though. I tried to get, you know, agents to read what I was writing all the time. I always do. So, you know, I had a lot of material, but I couldn't get anyone to read it. In fact, I was even at one point, I was making little fortune cookie, like things to put in a fortune, like read synchronicity. You know, I mean, it was that. I was like that desperate. And I was working
as
a...
Or that creative. I mean, we can give you props for that.
It's kind of shameless. But it was, you know, it was really tough. A few years of, maybe 4 years of that, just really just... I was working as a grip and electric. I worked on a Zalman King porn-like soft. That was my first job. That was really exciting.
He did Red Shoe Diaries, that HBO kind of soft porn. Yeah.
I was doing anything. I couldn't get anyone. So literally what happened was a friend of mine, Warren Davis, worked at MPCA, a company I think is now defunct maybe. But they made Kingpin with the Farrelly Brothers. Farrelly Brothers are great guys, and they had some short ends left. And we got... Short ends being what's left in the can after they shot. And they have to change reels.
There's literally unused film.
Unused film left. Okay. Yeah, a little bit here and little pieces here and there. So we took those. And in 2 days, I shot a film, Fallen Arches. It was a mockumentary about Ronald McDonald. He was a drunk. He was trying to get a job again. McDonald's had dropped him.
You know, I will be the first to admit that I was not immune to the temptations that came with the fame and the money. But I'm working on it.
Like, wrote it in a few hours, shot it in 2 days on 35. Everything was free. And we edited it one night. Warren sent it to friends who were working as assistants in Hollywood for producers. We didn't even know anyone who was, you know, important. And within like 2 weeks, I think the first call we got was from Eddie Murphy's brother in New York, Charlie Murphy, who literally just left a message that said, "Funny, funny, 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 funny." And I thought, "This is, how did he possibly see this thing in New York?" And it was literally in 2 weeks. My life changed. I mean, I had agents coming to my little house that I had paid for my rent on my credit card for 3 months. I mean, it was all the people I sent those little, you know, goofy little things to try to get them to read were all, you know, I had meetings scheduled with network heads, studio heads. Michael Keaton called Ron Howard. You know, I went to lunch with Ron Howard and he said, I said, which was surreal and bizarre. And he's an incredibly nice guy. And I said, you know, Mr. Howard, I have this tape. If you know, if you want to see my short, and he said, "Oh, I got one from Mel." I thought Mel Gibson. I guess he's talking about Mel Gibson.
Jeez.
So you know, George Clooney. I kept there. It was just one of those underground Hollywood hits.
And, all right, wait, hold on a second. Now, what year are we talking about now?
This is 98, I think.
Okay, and you got to Hollywood in 95. All right, so now 3 years have gone by. The truth of the matter is, you haven't been having a hard time. You've just been paying your dues like everybody else.
Yeah, exactly.
Your expectations were perhaps a little too high.
Probably.
And in fact, what's happening now really never happened. So you're way ahead of the game, even though you might not think you are.
Yeah, it was incredible. I mean, I was on the front page of Variety. It was the most amazing, incredible experience. So I literally got thrown into development at a very high level, you know, with a big manager, big agent, attorney, 25% off the top, you know, right there. And I just thrust into development. I signed a deal with MTV Films. I started doing TV deals. I mean, I was just doing... I knew that this window would close, so I just kept... plate spinning. I mean, I just kept pitching and pitching and going out and signing deals. And the bad thing is, you know, the words of Hal Hartley came back. Basically, it's so hard to get something through this development system. I mean, after I would be called into NBC and they'd do a blind script deal, which is really exciting. They give you a deal to come up with whatever, you know. And literally, I'd never written a TV show at that point. And
now why did they think that you could?
It's all buzz. I mean, that's all that
you
really...
You were hot, and that's enough.
Yeah, let's get him before ABC signs him. I mean, it's always that way.
Now, when they signed you, did you make money just from being signed?
Yeah, you make great money, especially television. It's fantastic. I mean, there's literally a bidding war the first time I went out to networks, and I retained that as my quote. So it really, you know, that was a few years of really great income, but terrible creative frustration because you're getting nothing finished.
I think that's kind of a little-known problem with Hollywood is that people think the fact that you're making money is the brass ring.
Yeah.
But you can only do that so long.
Yeah.
If you don't finally have production credits, somebody finally figures out, hey, this guy is not somebody you want to work with because nothing he touches ever actually turns to an actual program, movie, or whatever.
Exactly. And right. And you have no awareness going in what the variables are that contribute to that success or failure of a project in development. And usually it's... You know, executives leave jobs or get fired so frequently. It's a very volatile atmosphere.
Right, so those relationships can vaporize.
Quickly. If anyone comes in, I've had this happen several times. I had a movie at United Artists that I signed that would be my first feature. It was like a $15 million feature. And Lindsay Duran was the studio head, and she was absolutely wonderful. And we were ready to cast. We'd gone through several drafts of a script, and she was fired. And all her executives beneath her were fired. And everything in development then immediately goes on the shelf with a new regime. And that's happened to me so many times.
Let me go back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
The first time you got a decent paycheck and the first time you met with a really big name,
mm-hmm.
you had a huge foot in the door and you thought, I am set.
Yeah. Immediately lease a BMW, like before your meeting even.
Right.
Just go to a dealership.
And I'm going to guess that when that check finally arrived that you and your friends got plenty drunk.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Right. Okay.
The first time I could go to a store, look at something and buy it.
But you had now a period of how many years where you were having meetings at high levels, you were getting things signed, you were in development, you were doing TV and acting and writing and, you know, producing.
Yep.
How many years went by where money was coming in but nothing was getting actually – was reaching completion?
It's, you know, I was trying to recount it because it's all been such a blur, you know, maybe 3 or 4 years of that. You know, you get in meetings with 5, 6 executives and everyone has their notes. I mean, they have to justify their job somehow. So they all come in with their notes. By, you know, for just a TV script in the span of a few months, you can write, you know, 12, 15 drafts. I pitched something that was like The Commitments to NBC, and it became The Monkees. That's the way development goes. So it really beats you down.
Tell me a great pitch story.
Great pitch story. I pitched a room full of executives. One of the very big executives who was supposed to be there, he couldn't make it. So he called in. And he said he hit a pothole and he had 2 flat tires. And he said he was at like a Pep Boys. So they put him on speaker and I'm pitching everyone in the room. And I can hear, he's in the middle of like a body shot. I can hear all those like pneumatic drills.
Right.
So I'm pitching a comedy and he keeps saying, louder, can you pitch it louder? So I'm.
If you're just joining us, our producer Matt Holzman is speaking with Eric Fleming, who somehow manages to be both a Hollywood aspirant and a veteran all at the same time. Despite lunching with Ron Howard and signing numerous development deals, he really hasn't made it in Hollywood. Perhaps starting at the top has been more of a curse than a blessing.
Now, you've kind of reached a triple buy rhythm low. You're thinking, well, this is just not going to happen.
But you keep believing the next one does. And
what was the thing that kind of came through?
I think... Well, first of all, what happened was a failure. I created a show with Michael Keaton at Fox, and I thought, well, this, if anything has a good shot, it's this. But he didn't really want to act in it. He said he would do like a recurring role, but I figured, well, this type of person behind it definitely has a shot. But Doug Herzog, I think, left Fox, and that was the end of that. And I thought, well, if that doesn't go...
Exactly. He was an executive there.
Yeah, he was
developing it. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So I thought, I really have to rethink what I'm doing here. And I started thinking about Hal Hartley and the guys in New York and me being a filmmaker. I can actually shoot and act and direct. So I thought, I'll just make an indie film. And that's really, Andrea Michaud was a great producer, who raised a financing executive producer, Karen Blessington. We put together an indie feature. So I, you know, that was real. I just thought, I've got to start doing something. I've got to have a credit. I mean, besides, I enjoy it. You know, you have to like rediscover yourself after being like this development, you know, running around town like a performing monkey. You know, you have to find out what it is you do and why did I start doing this in the first place.
Now, you did finish that movie and it was called?
The Almost Guys.
And I've seen the film and I really thought it was a very nice film.
Yeah, thanks.
So now when was the film actually completed?
Completed 2004.
So now we're talking almost 4 years later, years later. And
we tried to do this, you know, because spending $500,000 on a film is not a lot. And it looked pretty good. So we thought we would be completely independent and you know, challenge the distribution model and do a very aggressive online campaign. It's impossible. You know, I mean, it's really impossible. You have to work with the same distributors. You have to go through those same channels. I mean, it's really, you know, maybe that's possible in music, but it isn't in film right now. So it's another lesson learned. So, you know, fortunately, you know, I gained steam again I starred, wrote, and directed in this with Robert Culp, Shawnee Smith, who's in the Saw series, and on Becker.
She's an incredibly funny woman.
She's a wonderful actress. Robert Culp is a really interesting hip cat. I mean, he's a really fascinating guy. So
he's very funny as well.
So, you know, that we've used that again, manager, agent, to sort of, you know, generate steam and interest again. So,
and how has that worked for you? I mean, this is not just some junky independent film. This is an extremely watchable, professionally made feature film. Has that worked as a calling card for you?
Yeah, it has. It's funny. You never know who sees it. Even like Netflix called Universal and said, hey, we saw this film and we want to carry it. You should, you know, you should distribute it. So that, you know, word does get around. And then within the Hollywood community, the strange thing, though, is there is no indie scene anymore like there was when I was with Hal Hartley and those guys. It's just, it doesn't really exist anymore. I mean, it's, you know, Searchlight is not, I mean, they are sort of indie, but they're not. I mean, really, it's all sort of franchised.
You're talking about Fox Searchlight. Now, all these, all the large studios now have what they call their specialty film divisions where they're, you know, they do buy small indie films, but it's not indie in the way, indie means something differently now than it used to.
It really does. Yeah, it's very difficult. There's a million kids out there with you know, mini DV cameras shooting indie films. But really, you know, you have to ally yourself with certain people in order to get attention and distribution of any to any extent, like Napoleon Dynamite or something. So yeah, I'm literally back in the development. The problem is development is different now. I mean, the TV networks are not doing well. They're not handing out the deals they used to hand out. I mean, they just aren't. I mean, I think this year, six sitcoms were picked up by all the networks combined, which is really unheard of. That's very low. You know, we have a writer's strike coming. I'm in the guild, so that, you know, that's scaring everyone. So it's a really different climate. So yeah, I'm back out there pitching again, and you know, it's really for the money. You know, that's right.
You've given up on the whole creative satisfaction thing. Now you just want to be able to pay the rent.
Yeah, you have to, you know. And I mean, I you know, I've got something in development on the indie scene again, but it really, you know, I didn't pay myself out of that film. I, you know, ended up paying money into it. You end up, you know, the time it takes is just unbelievable to put a film together.
It's the greatest film financier in the world, MasterCard.
Yeah, pretty much.
So let's kind of review. Let's take a look back. Now, in some respects, you've had more success than 99.9% of the people who come to Hollywood. That is, you've met with people, you continue to have meetings, you've made money, you've made good money, and yet I don't think I'm being harsh in saying you haven't succeeded. You're not regularly working, you're not getting things to the screen. Why? Is it you?
Yeah, you know, you start to wonder. I mean, I think that, you know, when you come into the business like I did, so sort of high profile and on the front page of Variety, it's you know, like the overnight success stuff, it's very difficult because I'm not being sent out as a staff writer for TV, like sensible, you know, kind of things. I'm sent out to create a TV show. I mean, when you do that year after year after year, you know, the odds of really getting a show on the air are astronomical. I mean, planets have to align for you to find a slot in that fall lineup. It's really tough. So for me, there's always been no middle ground. There's either, you know, I'm on the precipice of tremendous success or failure all the time.
Would you have done it differently in retrospect? Would you have tried to come in kind of more at the ground level and not have been the Wunderkind, stellar success, Orson Welles kind of guy?
No. It sounds crazy to say that, but I don't.
It does.
I don't know if it's even harder to do it that way. I mean, really, to get their attention and then, you know, somewhat retain it for a period of 6-7 years, I think I'm much better off, really, you know. And the one thing is, when you do go around and sign these deals and do these development, you show that you can write. I mean, you're showing that you can take notes and craft stories. I mean, this is, it's a small town. I mean, every executive knows each other, and they know that you can at least produce material, you know. So,
but what do you think your reputation is?
I wonder now, you know. I wonder, maybe going off and doing the indie film, maybe that makes you sound difficult. Maybe that does. I don't know. It's maybe I don't want to know.
Coming up after a short break, more with filmmaker Eric Fleming about achieving the elusive Hollywood dream. He's made money, he's made deals, but he hasn't made a name for himself. Yeah. You're listening to The Business from NPR.
Go to Hollywood, find a pretty girl, show them your world.
We'll be right back.
is The Business, and I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner. Hollywood is sometimes called the only place in the world where people can die of encouragement. Our producer, Matt Holzman, is speaking with a filmmaker who's almost been encouraged right into oblivion. Eric Fleming came to Hollywood in 1995 with good looks, talent, and experience. He's had high-level meetings, been signed to numerous deals. He even made the front page of Variety. But he's yet to finesse a project through the maze of development.
I think with all this crazy stuff that did happen to me, I am rediscovering myself and what, you know, what I do well. Now I want to pitch. Howard Klein is my manager, and he's 3 Arts Entertainment. They won an Emmy for The Office, executive producing that. I mean, really a wonderful manager.
And how did you hook up with him?
I've been with him since that short film went around Hollywood. You know, it's that so that long I've been with 3 Arts, and they have great, you know, comedy talent, and it's, you know, it's amazing. Again, I'm validated by my association with them and with Howard, you know. So, and I've got this young agent who's really sharp, Ryan Saul, and you know what I'm doing, I'm going to go back and pitch again, and Howard will probably attach himself as an executive producer. I sold this idea in 2001, and it was a hybrid reality scripted. And it was basically, I sold it to Fox. They wanted to do interstitials, which I thought was a great idea. During all through prime time, they would revisit a character and see if they can generate interest in a series that way. You know, like they did The Simpsons started on the Tracy Ullman show. So right. It was a great idea.
So interstitials are little short films using the characters from other shows and their own little mini short films.
Maybe. Exactly. Right. Yeah. So I sold them this idea where I played this kind of a good old boy, a guy who has an adventure show, outdoorsy show for like a Discovery Network. And he goes in character to crazy places, you know, bowls with, you know, in a nude bowling league, swims with sharks, and he does it in character, in reality, unscripted. And then it's really the making of that show. Behind the scenes, he's terrified of most of the things. He's not a good old boy. The country thinks he is. Right. And, you know, he's just, you know, sort of a neurotic, nebbishy guy who's, you know, nervous about it. So I sold that to them back then. And then 9/11 happened, and they canceled that whole idea. I mean, they lost so much revenue, I think, on advertising that, but, it, you know, to my credit, it was kind of an idea ahead of its time. So, you know, it was before Borat and all that stuff. So I'm going to go back out and pitch that. I've talked to Howard Klein about it a lot, and I think I'm actually going to shoot an episode or two. So, because that's, you know, one thing is if you can do it, you might as well just do it, you know? I mean, so I'm scheduled to go, I have to go bowl nude in Cleveland with a nude bowling league, and I'm actually going to swim with great whites in a cage in November. So.
Listen, you've already been in Hollywood for 7 years. It can't be any worse.
Exactly, you know? So I think you just have to keep recreating yourself constantly and let them know that you've got a lot of material. I mean, if you go out there with a short film and one script and, you know, and just kind of, you know, throw it around everywhere and hope that someone bites, I mean, it's not going to happen.
I'm going to assume, having seen that one feature, that you have skills, that you can act, that you can write, that you can direct, you can produce, you can do all the things that you need to do. But that obviously is not enough to make it in Hollywood.
No.
It's clear to me that you are voracious enough. You're willing to scale a wall at Paramount to get to a meeting. And yet, you know, luck obviously is a very large percentage of what determines success in Hollywood. And quite frankly, you've had an extraordinary amount of luck.
I have. Both good luck and bad luck.
Right. What point do you start thinking, well, gee, my manager is not going to care, you know, he's going to drop me because I'm not bringing in revenue to his company? At what point do you think people are going to say, oh, Eric Fleming, yeah, he's been here 15 times and nothing's ever happened?
I think that every single day. And I think that's probably what keeps me going, you know? I mean, that's what keeps me working so hard, I think. I mean, because I have that, maybe I'm completely paranoid, but I think that every day.
At what point do you think that it's time to kind of, you know, go in another direction?
Yeah, I don't. That's a tough call. With everyone out here, these are dreams. You know, it's not just a career. You know, just aspiring to a career. Your dreams are wrapped up in it. That's what makes it so difficult, and that's what makes this town, Hollywood, sometimes so depressing. You know, there's a lot of broken dreams walking around. People with real talent too. So, I don't know. I mean, the sad thing in a way is for me, having kind of reached this level, it's like sitting at a table with a huge pot. You know, you're playing poker and you're at the table and there's a big pot there, And it's that kind of addiction. You can't really leave because you're so close, you know? And you know, before I was just a guy walking around the table watching other people play, and that's a lot easier to leave. But when you're at the table, they got you, you know? And it's really tough to leave. I mean, that's I guess the long and short of it. Never is the answer. I'll never leave.
Well, when you first came to Hollywood, what was your definition of success, and what is your definition of success now?
That's an interesting question, because I really enjoyed that New York scene and the indie scene so much that I thought I would go back to that. So I don't know. I just thought I'd come out here and try it and see what happened. I didn't think that I would make this short film that, you know, Mel Gibson and Ron Howard would be watching. So I think, I don't know, I think that changes my definition of success. For some reason now I feel like I have to be validated by the system, because I've been in development so much that I would really like to get something on the air.
But when you first got here, your idea of success was huge Hollywood mansion, all the babes you could want, of, you know, a Lamborghini Countach.
Sure.
And now?
Now I'd settle for a 69 Chevelle and a show on Discovery Channel. I think I just really at this point, honestly, and this sounds really cheesy, but I just want to work. You know, I like the work. I like to get together with people and do this and collaborate with other talented people. I mean, that's really the honest truth. I'm not so worried about the fame and a lot of money. It just, it's nice that usually comes with it, I guess. but I really would just like to work. You know, I think just getting something and seeing it produced, you know, regularly, it must be a really rewarding experience, rather than, you know, sitting in your room and coming up with the ideas and you know, getting in development and changing them and not seeing them ever work or come alive. So that's how it's changed. I really just want to, at this point, I just want to do the work, you know, travel the journey.
Good luck to you.
Thank you.
And I hope that when you're huge, you will, you'll return my phone call.
Absolutely.
Invite me to all the right parties.
Absolutely, Matt. I will.
All right.
Just a decaf coffee, I'll do it. Believe me.
Eric Fleming is a filmmaker working in Hollywood and trying to make it big. Eric, thanks so much for joining us on The Business.
Thank you for having me.
Before we go, here's one more story from Eric Fleming about a fateful meeting he took with Fox executive Peter Rice.
His couch was white. The walls were stark. Everything was so white that I started to get really dizzy, you know, and that you can't see depth. It's almost like skiing in a whiteout or something. And I'm just pitching in circles. I had no idea what I was going to say. I really thought I might vomit in the middle, and I had to lay down on his couch. Like, I just in the middle of the meeting, I just had to.
What did you say? I'm sorry. I need to lie down.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I said, Peter, I'm sorry. This is I'm not feeling. I don't know if it's the white or what, but I got to lie down.
What did he say?
He was really nice about it. I think he was kind of shocked, you know, and I took a little, you know, mid-pitch nap. I don't know if anyone's done that before.
So, and what happened with this project?
Oh, you know, it didn't get picked up. I mean, come on, you can't. The lesson is, don't nap in the middle of a pitch. It's not.
Lessons from Hollywood with Eric Fleming.
That's right. No napping mid-pitch. It's probably not going to sell. Maybe if it was a serious, you know, drawing room comedy. I mean, a serious drama, maybe. I would have.
Or a movie about narcolepsy.
That would have worked if I went and nodded off right in the middle of it. Yeah. So that was probably, you know, he actually was good enough to call me.
And ask how you were?
He called me at home. Yeah. What a nice guy. He actually called me at home to see if I was okay.
He will never forget you.
Probably not.
And that's The Business. Matt Holzman produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. Darby Maloney is our associate producer. You can listen to this or any past program online anytime at kcrw.com/thebusiness. You can also podcast the show on KCRW's site or through iTunes. Our email address is thebusiness@kcrw.org. The Business is produced by KCRW Santa Monica and distributed by National Public Radio. I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner. We'll see you next week on The Business.
KCRW offers more than 20 podcasts covering politics, news, music, arts, and culture. For more details, visit kcrw.com.